Welcome to the Shamanism Global Summit, an extraordinary gathering of teachers and healers from around the planet, sharing insights, principles, and rituals for personal and collective healing and transformation. Please share this event with your friends and family, and come join us on Facebook at The Shift Network. And now your host, Michael Stone.
Welcome, everyone, to the 2016 Shamanism Global Conference. This is your host, Michael Stone, and I am so excited about our next guest. Evelyn Reisdijk is the author of several books on shamanic spirituality, including Spirit Walking, A Course in Shamanic Power, and her newest book, The Norse Shaman, which will be in bookstores on September 1st. She's committed to awakening and supporting people to become the ones we've been waiting for. Evelyn, I've been waiting for this call, and I'm excited about it. Welcome.
Oh, thanks so much, Michael. It's fun. We're talking between the coasts. I'm here on the coast of Maine, and you're out there on the West Coast. I love technology.
That's right. I do, too. I do, too. And technology has its good parts, but it also has some negative things, and that is how it seems to create more separation. There's this sense, I think, this unexamined belief in the world that we're separate. You know, we're separate from our bodies, the way we act. We're separate from each other. We're separate from the web of life. And I love the work that you're doing about connectedness and what you're calling reverent participatory relationship. Tell us about that. Let's begin our conversation there.
Right. I just want to honor the spirits that are all around us, and rather than bringing out a rattle or a drum, I'm going to ask everybody who's listening to use their most powerful shamanic tool, and that's their heart. To open their heart as best as they can, and to reach out to those places in the world that you love, that you treasure, the people that you love, that you treasure, the animals and birds that you love and you treasure. And just allow yourself to feel the fullness of gratitude for being held in that way by places and by people and by other creatures that love you. And
that's
as we
beautiful.
Feel that feeling of gratitude, we are giving that bath back to all that is. Simple, and it's a good way to start.
It's a very good way to start. I always, whether I say it or not, always start the same way. And I'm so grateful for this opportunity to share these shamanic principles with our listeners today. So I mentioned the idea of connectedness and a connection with the reverent participatory relationship that you talk about.
Yes, I wanted to try to decode, originally as a student of shamanism and then as a practitioner and now a teacher for decades now at this point, I wanted to figure out the difference that I felt between powerful tribal shamans and what we would call a Western practitioner. There seemed to be a palpable difference. It didn't have to do with how old they were. It didn't have to do with where they were from. There was just this certain something. It's like they kind of sizzled with power, but it was this gentle kind of aliveness. And Sandy Ingerman once said somebody had smiling eyes. They had a light in their eyes. And that's very true. These tribal shamans had something that we didn't seem to have. And what I realized, every tribal society practices gratitude in a very primary way. Shamans around the world use offerings of gratitude. And they're always in this process of giving to the world around them because there's this sense that they are always receiving from the world around them. And that makes really specific sense for a shamanic practitioner because we do not do our work alone. We have to borrow power from the beings around us in the natural world. and the spirits that we work with that are around us. If it were not for our ability to borrow that power, we would not be effective. And I think the most ancient shamans understood that, probably because it derives from the hunter-gatherer relationship that they were in with the natural world. They understood that they had to be in a concrete relationship with all the beings around, with the beings that created the weather, with the migrating herds, with the flocks of birds that would come back and forth seasonally, with the plants when things were ripe and able to be harvested. They had to be in that kind of intimate relationship. You know, when we have an intimate partner, we know the tiniest look, and we know what they're thinking. We know what they're feeling. And the tribal shamans have that same understanding of the animals and the birds and the plants where they live. But we have to learn how to do that. You know, we have to learn that. It's not an intrinsic part of the way we live in our culture. And so we have to relearn that way of being.
Huh.
And that's part of what I like to teach, is to help people enter back into a way of being that is not only transformative for themselves, it deepens their ability to be effective in the world. It improves how healthy you are. And it also improves the health of the beings around you. That's what's remarkable.
That is remarkable. I often tell the story about one something that a shaman said to me in Peru one time. I was at a gathering, actually, to help preserve their art forms. And we were doing a mesa sitting there, and he was laying out these leaves. And all of a sudden, he looked at me with these fierce eyes, and he said, "Where's your mountain?"
Mm-hmm.
And I just went, I knew the minute he asked me where my mountain was. In fact, I'm very close to it right now. But it was so much more than that. It was recognizing that that's where we draw our real power from, is from the web of life, is from our connection with the elements and the mountains and the trees. And yet we're looking at a landscape of our culture that is what they call nature deficit disorder. We're completely cut off. So when you say how to enter into a deeper relationship with these relationships, you know, my question is, well, how can people actually do that? What are some of the ways that you teach people to do that?
We start inside of ourselves. When we work inside the laboratory of ourselves, we begin to shift everything. And there has actually been a great deal of research about our inner environment and our feelings in particular that the Institute of Heart Math has done. And that's quite an extraordinary body of work. Basically, they discovered that our feelings, those things that we've kind of shunted aside in the favor of our mind, you know, we wanted to promote the mind and sort of set the feelings aside. We saw them as kind of interferences, I guess. Anyway, those feelings actually have the capacity to change the way our body functions. They can actually affect the shape of the molecule of DNA in every one of our cells. The shape, when I mean the shape, is that DNA folds onto itself. They have to cram, you know, our creator had to cram a lot of information into a very small space. And so the DNA molecule is this beautiful spiral ladder, but it's also kind of compressed into a space in the cell. When we are feeling angry or afraid, and there's a whole bunch of other ones that fit into that, when we're expressing judgment, when we're feeling shame, when we're feeling blame, when we're depressed, when we're anxious, all of those are really forms of fear. When we're feeling that, the state of our DNA changes. The physical shape of it begins to change. It's called its conformational state. It actually winds tighter onto itself. Imagine twisting a rope until it kind of twists up into a knot. The same thing happens to our DNA. And why that is important is where the actual shape of the molecule, where the DNA crosses itself, contributes to what genetic material is turned on and what genetic material is turned off. We're supposed to have some turned on and some turned off all the time. It's very specific genetic material, like I believe we have a dominant gene for six fingers and toes, but most of us have that turned off. We want to have some things off, some things on, but we don't want those switches to be monkeyed with. Because when we monkey with the switches, then we can have, first of all, the DNA not work well, so it can't regulate cells, it doesn't divide properly, and we start to see that its ability to regulate the functions in our body change. I think this is a sort of a concrete example of why we have stress-related illness, because stressful situations usually produce feelings of fear, anxiety, depression, anger, all those feelings that actually change the way, on the most basic level, our body functions. And so we can't be healthy when we're in that state. On the opposite side of the spectrum, when we're feeling grateful or that we're experiencing love or compassion or even appreciation, the DNA relaxes into its perfect shape. It means all of us goes back online. Our upper brain goes back online. Because when we're in a DNA cramp, we're operating from the lowest part of who we are. So we shut off this marvelous top of our brain where we have higher reasoning capacity. And yet when we go into gratitude, there it is. Everything goes back online. And we're able to be more fully ourselves. And all of us is working in harmony. From that place, something really powerful occurs, because as we are working to that place of gratitude, that is so beneficial to the beings around us. Their bodies begin to harmonize from our own feelings, and they also will do the reverse. So if you think about mob mentality, somebody gets into a fury and suddenly everyone around them is in a fury. Or if you work in an office and one person is at the water cooler kvetching about their weekend and pretty soon everybody's complaining, our feelings are contagious. But a person who is not in harmony can disrupt feelings, but they can't harmonize the group around them. They're incapable of doing that when they're not in that place of harmony. When they go to a place of harmony, which the Institute of Heart Math calls coherence, they are actually able to produce harmony all around them, because our feelings are not just happening inside of our body. We transmit them in the non-local field, and the non-local field to me is the scientific word for the spirit. We actually affect on the spiritual realm all the beings that are around us. What blows me away is for tens of millennia, the shamans understood this. They didn't use scientific language. They didn't understand about DNA. Instead, they knew instinctively by their observations both inside themselves and of the world around them, that when they were in a place of gratitude and feeding the spirits, taking care of the land, taking care of the animals, that everyone benefited. And that's the piece we have to relearn.
Yes. Yes. So great what you're saying, and so many things in that. I love the heart math work. One of the things that was just startling is that the electromagnetic field of the heart being 5,000 times greater than that of the brain.
Yes.
A clue right there that it's pretty amazing.
But there again, the shamans talk about it being the path of the heart. Now, they didn't have machinery to test the electromagnetic field around our bodies. Mm-hmm. They simply understood from observation in the world. They were so keenly in the world, so keenly in relationship, they could see, just like we could see on our partner's or loved one's face, what they are feeling. They were able to perceive something was going on around them. And then with the skill of being able to journey, which to me is like the master key to all the doors, you can actually go and communicate with those spirits and go, I noticed this. What was happening for you? And you can do that with the animals and the plants and the birds. And suddenly you understand that what you are doing in the world impacts all the beings around you. And at first it's so stunning it almost paralyzes you, but in the next breath you recognize that, you know, one person, little old me, little old you, each one of us has the capacity to make a tremendous effect just by our way of being in the world.
So one of the pitfalls that I've seen in that from coaching thousands of people in this particular area is that many people will hear that as, oh, I have to suppress those fear feelings, those angry feelings, those feelings that I need to get rid of those feelings, rather than opening, embracing, and actually giving love to them and allowing them. Because I'd like you to talk about that sense of us trying to change things that are arising rather than bringing gratitude even to that.
Well, I think, first of all, we have to recognize that our feelings are giving us information. Mm-hmm. I think of our feelings, in fact, I divide up feelings and emotions, because emotions are really, really simple. They're mad, sad, glad, and scared. And they're like the nerve endings in the end of your fingertips that tell you, whoops, the stove is hot. They're giving us information from the environment. We've been triggered in some way by the environment, and now we have something to process, just like the information that comes from the nerve endings in our hand touching the stove. When we process that input, we go into our brain and go through all the other times we had that stimulus, and then out comes feelings. So the feelings are shaded by all of our previous experience. And when I work with our students, I say, if you find yourself reacting in a certain way over and over and over again, that's giving you a piece of information. It's giving you probably two pieces of information. One, about the particular circumstance that you reacted to. But secondly, it means you have something old inside that needs to be healed, because there's an old rut you drop into that is based on a previous experience, not what's happening now. So feelings are actually useful to give us information on how to continue to release anything that is unbeneficial to us that we no longer need, to heal any old traumas that we might have, so that we can more quickly return ourselves to a place of harmony, return ourselves to that place of being grateful. So I think of feelings as providing tremendous information for us. They let it, you know, it's difficult for us to go mining for our subconscious hooks and snares. But if we pay attention with a kind and grateful attitude, that we have an observer self that can watch how we react, watch how we talk about ourselves and the people around us, watch the feelings that we have. And then from that, oh, okay, I've just been given a piece of information. What do I want to do with it? And I find that actually is a shortcut to finding out what work needs to be done and to get it done. Because when
Absolutely.
You start to just separate yourself a little bit from the feelings that you're having, when you separate yourself from the feelings you're having just a little bit, you know, you have them, and then you back up and say, wait a minute, what is this? that gives you a tremendous power. Instead of always feeling at the effect of situations, when you recognize this repeating pattern is giving me information that I am now empowered to use, and with that empowerment, I can transform my experience. I can do what I can do on my own. I can get support around it, but I can change my experience of living so I don't have to live in that place where I feel oppressed or that I feel continually abused by the history that I have. I can move through the world with more ease and more grace, feeling less anxious, less depressed, feeling more connected to the world around me. And that's a tremendous prize. I think that's one of those ones to really reach for the gold ring. So our feelings are not in and of themselves any trouble to us. They are information that we have to learn how to work with.
Brilliant. I love that. They're really access to our healing and access to, when people talk about soul loss areas, this is a way to access lost soul parts also, isn't it?
Absolutely, because when we recognize that we have these patterns of behavior, which if we were in a tribal society, somebody'd call us on it for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, in our society, we just get angry at one another when we're stuck. You know, people get angry or they shun people who are really in a bad pattern, rather than going, "Hey, there's something going on. Let's look at what that is." You know, creating that kind of compassionate environment. You know, when we were hunter gatherers, we had to work together. We had no other choice. It was the only way we could survive. Now we've created a society where we have the illusion that we can do it all by ourselves. And that's not the case. We have to work together with at least one other person when we require support to unpack something. And the more we work together, the easier it becomes.
Yeah. There's kind of a dysfunctional pact there. I won't call you on your dysfunction if you don't call me on mine. You know, I see that often, and, you know, we don't bring it out like that. Talk about how this getting in touch with our feelings can affect our physical reality, our health in general.
Well, if you think about, you know, that idea that your DNA is actually changing in your body when you're feeling angry or you're feeling afraid, on the gross physical level, we have a shift in our hormone bath. Cortisol and adrenaline go up. The hormone of well-being, DHEA, goes down. And we're operating from our reactive place rather than our responsive place. It's that place where our body is being told by that chemical bath that we have to raise our blood pressure. We have to be ready to fight or flee or freeze like the little bunny rabbits. And those are not good places to be able to deal with what happens in life. We have to have all of us present. We have to be open-hearted and open-minded in order to find new solutions and ways of being. We have to be as strong as we possibly can. Not that our bodies will not age, that we will get sick from time to time, but there comes a kind of resilience. It's as if our baseline comes up and we have a kind of a cushion that helps us to rebound more quickly. You know, that raising up of our baseline. So if we have a time when we're feeling down, we're not crashing all the way down. We feel low and we know this is something that will pass. What do I need to do to take care of myself while I'm in this place? And there's much more of a flow. And on a physiological level, when we're not cranking adrenaline and cortisol and when we're experiencing a higher level of DHEA, we feel better. Our bodies function better. And when your immune system is working well, which is very much tied to our feelings, anybody who's had an extreme shock like an accident or a big emotional upset, usually between 5 and 10 days later, they've got an upper respiratory infection, or they've got some other ill that you know, some kind of sniffle thing that came along. Sometimes it's worse than a sniffle, because their immune system took a hit from that huge outburst. And what I like is, once you recognize you can have those feelings, you can rage and stomp and do whatever you have to do in a circumstance, but then you have to stop and go back into that place of gratitude, because the gratitude can do repair for the feelings you just experienced. So it's like learning to be facile with this kind of onboard technology that we've been ignoring for centuries, and using it for our own benefit and also for the benefit of the beings around us. Because every being with DNA is at the effect of how we behave.
Yeah.
So we think about the degradation of the environment. If we transform our own inner environment, we are actually contributing to the health and well-being of the creatures that are all around us.
You just brought me to the question that was in my mind, and that is about the challenges of our time. We, you know, certainly the environment is probably the most important one, but there's so many other challenges that are here with, you know, for health and economic and population, and there's just so many challenges that people up are against. And people really, you know, from my experience, in their heart of hearts, want to contribute and want to make a difference. But number one, they're so distracted and so busy often from living and surviving in a day-to-day life that they don't take the time. And two, some people don't even know, because the problems look so massive, is, well, where can I make a difference? How can I become a healing force for change? And that's something that I know you talk about, and I'd love to hear your thoughts around that area.
I can use a simple example. We opened and ran a health center with medical professionals as well as complementary practitioners for over 15 years. And when you get a group of 28 to 30 individuals in a room in a meeting, in spite of their best intentions, pretty soon everybody is talking over everyone else. And sometimes with a room full of people who are very intelligent and also believe that they are very intelligent, things can get a little hot. And it was always our intention to try to have respectful meetings, trying to be in that place where we listened to all the voices that were in the room. But of course, one at a time is the best way to do that. So when the room would get in a turmoil, my partner and I would be like, we would do our stealth shaman thing. We would simply go into that place of deep and profound gratitude. You know, we would have our reaction first, being annoyed that everybody was acting out, but then move into that place where we were in a deep, deep state of gratitude. Just quietly close our eyes and go to that place. And pretty soon, and it's minutes later, the room started to get quiet. And then people were taking a breath and starting to speak with one another in a far more respectful way instead of talking over them. And it was amazing. We did this over and over and over again. And it was kind of a fun thing to do, frankly, to see that you could get that entire room to settle down, because you were actually affecting them in a physiological way. So the beauty of being able to do that in a room full of people, we're affecting their physiology, not trying to tell someone, calm down. Because if you, I don't know if you're like me, if somebody tells me to calm down, it usually revs me up a little bit. It's like you get that indignant kind of, don't you tell me to calm down. And instead of doing that, by us going into that place of gratitude deep inside of ourselves, their physiology told them to calm down. And pretty soon, everyone in the room was back. All of their brains were back online. They were all settled down into their chairs again, and everybody was speaking kindly to one another. And to do that in a room of 28 people through no other skill than to go inside the self and remember something you felt grateful for. It could be how great the shower felt after gardening, you know, simple things. And to recall not just the thought of it, but until you felt it in your body. And that's all we had to do to change that circumstance. And so anytime we're with a group of people, which can be in the supermarket, which can be, you know, when you're doing all different things in the world, teaching, to go into that place of gratitude settles the room down, settles the group down. And people start behaving in a way that's far more civilized. I mean, if we look at our political situation in our country, and indeed we're seeing reflected over in Europe as well, there is kind of two different camps. There's a camp that's operating from this constricted place of fear and anger. And so they're very disruptive in their behavior. They're incoherent in their platforms. Things are not very well thought out. It feels impulsive because it's coming from that place of a DNA cramp. It's coming from the place of there's not enough for everyone. I have to grab mine because somebody else is going to get it instead. And on the other hand, you have, I think, just as many people in the world now growing that idea that if we work together, if we work from a place of harmony, if we go into that place of gratitude inside, if we heal our own personal wounds, we don't have to act them out in the world. And so all of that begins with us changing our own relationship with ourselves and our own feelings. From that, our relationships with the natural world, with the beings that are all around us, whether they be family members or friends or the neighbors or the whatever people you interact with, the ones at the office, and the trees that are in your yard, the birds that come to the feeders, the little critters that are running in the lawn, deciding how do I want to treat these beings from that place of being in harmony. It's not in their best interest for me to spread poison on the grass, nor is it in my best interest. How can I do this differently? When all of us is online, when we're in that place where our brains are functioning at their best, our bodies are functioning at our best, we're able to create solutions that take more than just ourselves into consideration. We start to get that big picture again, because nothing shuts you down like fear and anger. You become tunnel vision, and in that attitude of survival, that fight, flight, or freeze attitude. And that will not solve the problems we have in front of us. What will solve the problems that are in front of us is that expansion of ourselves into our fullness, and then reaching out to all the beings around us, taking metaphoric hands, linking our hearts, and working together.
Mm. I love that. That's beautiful. You know, when you're talking about expanding into our fullness, one of the areas that I think in our culture, in the Western culture particularly, that we've lost touch with our ancestral and our descendant relationships and the gratitude and the learning and what's available. Can you talk a little bit about the ancestral realm and how honoring our ancestors and the ancestors of all life can empower us to make this difference in the world that I think we agree that people really want to make a difference and express their talents and their gifts into the world?
And that's actually a favorite thing of mine. I am fortunate to be the daughter of a woman who started doing genealogical research on our family before I was born. Mm. And thanks to her and her amazing research done years before there was ever an internet, decades before there was an internet. I have the names and places where they were born of people all the way back to the 1500s on both sides of my family.
Mm.
And we took a lot of childhood car rides to cemeteries and looking through church records when I was a kid. And so I have a very palpable sense of the ancestors. I was also a firstborn, raised with not just grandparents, but great-grandmother and her siblings. And being the ancestors are very palpable to me, and I read a study, oh, it's probably 10 years old at this point, the European Psychological Association did research, many different tests, but I'll boil it down for the purposes of this interview. They discovered that people who think about their ancestors, whether they knew them or not, whether they liked them or not, did significantly better at problem solving and intelligence tests than the control or than another group that thought about people that loved them, that weren't family. It always came out that people who considered their ancestors before they took the tests did far better than either any of the other groups. So that told me two things. One is our ancestors, while they may not be alive in their own bodies, are still alive in ours. They live in our DNA. We are holding in our body the DNA from not just all of our human ancestors, but to the first life forms on the planet. So they live inside of us, and particularly on our mother's side, we have more of our mother's DNA because not only do we have half the nucleic DNA from our mother and father, we have mitochondrial DNA that comes directly from our mother and her mother and her mother and her mother back in time. So the ancestors live inside of us. So that may be one reason that we do better is we somehow turn on that capacity that lives inside of us. On the other hand, my shamanic hat on, I think, no, we have invoked their spirits. When we remember them, we're saying, please come help me. Because we know spirits have impeccable boundaries. The healthy ones are all right there, but we have to ask for help. So when we consider our ancestors, we automatically get their support. And now here's another thing that tribal shamans around the world have been doing for many millennia. Other cultures honor ancestors. You see ancestor altars and ancestor rituals all around the planet. And we're only starting to think about this in our culture now, thanks to things like 23andMe and the other the companies doing genetic testing. So utilizing the gifts that the ancestors provide us is, I think, critical part about changing the future for our descendants. Because you imagine that we're part of this long chain of beings that go back to the first cells that got together somewhere way back in time on our planet. And here we come, the progression of evolution, and we sit here now drawing breath in our bodies. But it doesn't end with us. Even if we don't have children, we're part of this larger group of beings that are bringing forth new generations. We may not be the blood ancestors of them, but we can be the milk ancestors, the nurturing ancestors for those descendants yet to come. And in order to deliver to them a world in which they can live, we need to be in a place that is far better than it is now. And we can call on the ancestors that are there all around us. I think 100,000 generations of human ancestors behind us, because we're not just Homo sapiens, we're Neanderthal, and we're Denisovan, and we're part Homo erectus, because all human beings on the planet today are the result of hybridization between modern and more archaic forms of human beings. We interbred with earlier species of human beings, no matter where we were on the planet. So we're all this marvelous intermingled family tree of beings, and we can call on all of that richness. Imagine all of the resilience that's there. If you lived long enough to pass your DNA on, you were strong enough, you were a survivor, you had skills, you had intelligence, you had to have something to be able to survive long enough to pass your DNA along. And so we carry that in our bodies, and we can take that and bring it forth by honoring the ancestors on behalf of those that come after us.
That is so powerful, really beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. We're getting close to the end of our time, and you have a new book coming out, and I'm excited about reading it. It's about Norse shamanism. Can you tell us about the book and just a little bit about Norse shamanism and what's unique and what we might learn from understanding our Norse brothers and sisters?
Well, I went into that book with the same kind of desire to try to figure out some solutions. I'm a very solution-oriented person, so I wanted to try to unpack in spirit walking what is the difference between how tribal shamans behave and Westerners behave. So I got that piece around reverent participatory relationship, among other things, in that book. For the Norse shaman, I'm all Northern European, half Norwegian, and the other half is Scottish and Dutch and German, also English. And there's at once this incredible wealth of culture that has come from that part of the world, but I also hold a great deal of horror at how we have treated the rest of the world. People from the north of Europe have decimated land and peoples all around the planet. And I wanted to understand why. I think it comes from understanding family systems therapy. You know, if you see some kind of big dysfunction, you know there's something going on in there, some kind of trauma that causes people to behave that way. And so I wanted to look at the myths and traditions in Northern Europe that retained some of their spiritual traditions, and also look at the climate science and what have you of early history in the whole European continent. It's part of Eurasia, much bigger area. The effects that climate had on the ancestors that changed their ways of being, not just to help understand where that trauma comes from, but also to help us understand what kind of changes we're looking at coming down the pike for us and how we can approach them differently than the ancestors so as not to have more trauma, but perhaps through seeing the reflection of the past and the present into the future, how we can change our way of being as human beings. And so I use the traditions from the Norse, and it's a very strong female tradition, and I think the divine feminine is really calling us to bring it back to the forefront so it stands side by side with the divine masculine, to look at those traditions as one path to help us not only understand what has gone before, but to change how things go forward. And it was important to me, again, because I carry that lineage. It's wonderful to study with people from all around the world, I have done that. I've studied with people from South America and Central Asia and Nepal and Siberia. But to be able to also look to my own ancestors, look to my own deep past, and not only see the beauty that's there, but to see where it went off the rails and figure out how to bring it back onto the track.
Well, I can't wait to read your new book, and I'm really looking forward to that. And such a great interview. I want to tell people, if you want to get the this to have for yourself, you can go to shamanismsummit.com /upgrade and own all of these sessions that we've been doing. And I'm just so deeply grateful to you, and I know our listeners are also, for the wisdom that you've brought to us for the ancient teachings and just all that you offer in your action-oriented way. I love that. And Evelyn, thank you. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much, Michael. And I want to thank the Shift Network and all the beings that are listening, whether they be human form, but also all the other beings around us that are waiting for us to step up to the plate and be our fullness.
Yes, indeed. Well, thank you, Evelyn Reisdijk, for your time and your energy and your wonderful presence with us. Many blessings to you.
You take care.
Thank you for joining us for the Shamanism Global Summit, brought to you by the Shift Network. For more information about joining our global community who are awakening to their divine humanity and taking inspired action, visit theshiftnetwork.com. To learn more about the entire Shamanism Global Summit collection of teachers and healers, or to add all these interviews to your personal library, visit shamanismsummit.com/upgrade. Thank you again for gathering with us and for sharing this empowering path with your friends and family.